Funny Books with Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I'm Andrew.
Have you guys seen Crime 101?
I have not. That's the one with Chris Hemsworth, right?
Yes.
I've never even heard of it.
I have heard from, you know, several respected sources that it's on par with Heat, which is one of my favorite movies.
Heat's amazing.
I love Heat. And so last night I settled in to watch Crime 101. And I have not watched it to date. That came out, I think, last fall.
Did you watch the first 100?
Well, my
it's weird to jump into it at 101.
I hate the title, which is the reason why I haven't seen it to date. But I keep hearing this great movie. And I was as bored as I could possibly be. So far, and I'm maybe halfway through it, I stopped because I was yawning so hard. it's got Chris Hemsworth in it, Halle Berry, Mark Ruffalo, and a bunch of other that guys in it. I mean, it's clearly well produced, but boy, I was colossally bored. So I was just curious if any of you boys had seen it, but apparently not.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say I've not. It sounds like I'm going to stay away from it as well.
Yeah, I'm a completist. I'll finish it, but I'll let you know how it ends. But,
Yeah, you know, I saw the trailer when it came out, but it pretty much came out with a whimper. And that, for me, was a sign, like, oh, a couple, you know, some word of mouth, you know, says it's as good as Heat. Like, first of all, nothing is. Like,
yeah, exactly.
What is this movie Heat you guys are talking about? Because I've never heard of it either.
I know. So Heat is basically like one of the most iconic crime movies of all time. It's got Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, Val Kilmer, John Voight, Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo, yeah.
Michael Madsen. Like anyone who was popular from crime or mafia movies in the 90s or 80s or 90s was in this movie. And so
That would explain why I've never heard of it, because I don't like crime movies.
Yeah, it is. I will say it is also the quintessential man movie, in that. You know, it's like men being tough, and you know, like it's about what they don't say. It's, you know, kind of this bromance against, you know, but also like this rivalry. It is iconic for a reason.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's just fantastic. Paul and I nerd out about it offline quite a bit.
Yeah. And I keep seeking it. I keep seeking the next Heat. You know, I was very excited when Den of Thieves came out. You know, despite having not that kind of cast. You know, there was like, oh, it's like the modern day Heat. And I will say, Den of Thieves is actually quite good.
I like Den of Thieves. I haven't watched Den of Thieves 2 yet.
The thing about Den of Thieves 2 is it's almost exactly like you described Crime 101. Mm-hmm. It is beautifully filmed. It is well acted. It is boring as shit. it takes its sweet time getting nowhere. And that's the thing. I was like, wow, this film is really, because it's so, it was advertised so well.
Right.
I was like, this film is giving me strong Heat vibe. And then I watched it. I'm like, this is as if nothing happened. That's what this movie is.
Yeah. Let's make
it's worth watching, but it's slow.
Let's make Heat, but with none of the good stuff.
Yeah, without the 20-minute, bank sequence.
God, I love that. I love that sequence. So good. Okay, since you invoked Gerard Butler, star of Den of Thieves and Den of Thieves 2, have you seen Greenland?
I have not. Even though I have an interest in it, I have just not seen it. Because that is Mirena Baccarin in it, right?
Correct. Yeah, plays his wife. So Greenland sets up, and by the way, there will be a spoiler here. Greenland sets up a extinction level event asteroid coming to the Earth, and everyone trying to, you know, get somewhere safer than where they are. And Gerard Butler is an engineer, and he is on the short list of people to survive, you know, to go to this special bunker in Greenland. You know, he and his family, you know, are scheduled to go there and be part of the re-civilization of the planet. And of course, you know, hijinks ensue, and it's a whole mad dash to get there on time. One of the complications in the show is that his son is a type 1 diabetic. And So, you know, there's a lot of anxiety and complications in making sure that they've got insulin, you know, to take with them, and that, you know, and he's a kid who's on an insulin pump and, you know, very medically fragile in terms of his blood sugars. And, you know, they're having a lot of trouble with all the anxiety that he's experiencing, keeping his levels correct, all that kind of fun stuff. Well, when they get to the plane that's going to take them to Greenland, they find out that the kid's a diabetic. And they're like, I'm sorry, we're not taking anybody with chronic illness. He can't come. So they have to go another way. That's the big complication. Now, The one thing they never address in the movie, when they finally, and here's the spoiler, they successfully make it to Greenland right before the asteroid hits. Nobody addresses if you aren't allowing anybody with a chronic illness, if you're not, you know, committing resources to the care and support of, for instance, a medically fragile type 1 diabetic, you're not going to have insulin, or you're certainly not going to have insulin or the capabilities of producing insulin forever, you know, because his type of diabetic is going to require insulin forever. Greenland 2, which I just recently watched. Kid's doing okay. No conversation about how they produced insulin over this 5-year span of time. And I'm like, So how'd they solve that problem? And I keep thinking they're going to talk about it, because they talk about it a lot in the first movie, and they just don't address it. In fact, they're, you know, Greenland 2, the asteroid is back. And so they identify there's this other place that they can go to. And so it's a mad dash there. And again, no comment at all throughout the entire movie about where how we're going to make insulin in this forest where there is no medical infrastructure or any other type of infrastructure that they make it to. In fact, Gerard Butler sacrifices his life so that his son can survive. I'm like, for a week, you know, I mean, I found it very questionable.
You know, they're not going to be in Greenland 3, basically.
All he needs is a week. He'll get better.
Yeah.
Walk it off.
You know, they found out that the insulin subplot line did not test well after the first Greenland, so they just wrote it right out of the script for two.
Yeah, I have to say, the first one sounds like a movie that I would actually, you know, I would watch.
It's pretty entertaining. I love
those type of movies.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could get through the second one after such a huge plot hole gets dropped. The asteroid is back.
Yeah, I don't know anybody who's seen Greenland 2, I'm just dying for somebody to have seen it so we can talk about, you know, how did we solve the problem for the insulin? Is it a big secret after the asteroid hits? You know, the secret cabal providing insulin. I don't know. Anyway, just, you know, about movies I've seen on streaming.
Well, you know, you mentioned, well, we were talking about Marina Baccarin. So she is in Masters of the Universe. I don't know if you guys knew this.
I did not know that. Who does she play? Yeah,
she plays the Sorceress. So if you're, you know, for anyone who's familiar with Masters of the Universe, you know, and He-Man, the Sorceress is, you know, the kind of over, the protector of Castle Grayskull, which is where the power resides in Eternia. And so she plays that character, and, you know, I mean, she doesn't have much to do other than stand there, say wise things, and you know, disappear for 80% of the movie, but right. She's in it. So I actually saw Masters of the Universe. I have, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, and just based on timing of ages, right? Like, you can kind of see, you know, we all have a few years in between us, and I happen to be at that prime time of Masters of the Universe when that really hit the cultural zeitgeist. And so, you know, when that came out when I was a kid, I just gobbled it up. It was everything, you know. I loved sword and sorcery type stuff as a kid, and this was, you know, made basically like tailor-made for me. I loved it as a kid growing up. And so when they announced this movie, and I actually am one of the few, you know, I think it's become more of a cult favorite at this point, but you know, I also loved the 1987 movie. I mean, that came out when
I was 7-year-old. Movie.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say the 87 movie was good, but it was an entertaining movie.
It was, and it was very much, you know, I understood why it didn't go anywhere, you know, with the whole Canon Pictures debacle, but, you know, I loved it. And you know, when they announced this new movie coming out, I was psyched. I mean, I was psyched for it. But I also knew it had an uphill battle. Still does, right? Like, it's not a one. It's stupid, right? Like He-Man, Skeletor, you know, Ram Man, Fisto. You know, these characters are, you know, these are not characters. You know, it's a hero in a loincloth, and you know, it's not a concept that works necessarily for a modern day audience. And I will say the movie does its best to bridge that gap. So the new movie came out. I saw it on opening night because I was so psyched for it, and I loved it. I will say I was smiling from ear to ear the entire time. It is very much in the vein, you know, people. I actually never saw the Barbie movie, but people say it has some similarities to the Barbie movie. You know, obviously I would probably compare it a little bit more to like Guardians of the Galaxy a little bit, in that it really embraces a humorous aspect without being a comedy. It is a fantasy movie, an action fantasy with a lot of humor, pokes a lot of fun at character names and, you know, very much, you know, kind of talks through some of that, the silliness of it and the characters' names like He-Man and stuff like that. And so I genuinely enjoyed this movie. I think the acting was all fun. I think the characters are a joy to watch. I think, you know, everyone does a great job. The guy who plays He-Man, it's like Nicholas Galitzine or something like that. He's, you know, he does a great job as Prince Adam and He-Man. You've got Camila Mendez from Riverdale as Teela, Idris Elba as Man-at-Arms, and Jared Leto as Skeletor, which normally I would have an issue with, but like, you can't tell it's Jared Leto. He's got a skeleton for a face, and it's a CG skeleton face, not a mask like Frank Langella, but he does a bang up job as Skeletor. And so I will say, you know, the film, it is not doing well at the box office, not surprisingly. You know, it's Amazon, so it'll probably do gangbusters when it moves to Prime. It is absolutely worth seeing. It's probably, which I find common in movies nowadays, even, you know, most recently, Mandalorian and Grogu, probably about 10-15 minutes too long in the third act. And I felt much the same about Star Wars, Mandalorian and Grogu. But I will say I enjoyed this movie significantly more than I
enjoyed Mandalorian. I've got it on my schedule to watch this weekend. We saw a disclosure of last night. We've seen Masters of the Universe probably today. So looking forward to it. So my question for you, because I read the new Masters of the Universe Wings of Fate comic book from Dark Horse that came out this week.
Yes.
Written by Tim Sheridan, art by Will Slaney. So is this a prequel to the movie?
So I'm not spoiling much, you know, but basically in the movie, the concept of Masters of the Universe, the movie, is that Prince Adam, you know, born on Eternia by, you know, the king and queen, I forget their names off the top of my head, but Skeletor raids the castle, or, you know, their kingdom, and they send He-Man, or Prince Adam, to Earth, because that's where his mom is.
For safekeeping, yeah.
For safekeeping, right? Which, yeah, for whatever it's worth, like, that's, it's not exactly what happened, but, you know, it is in canon that his mom is from Earth. So, you know, I'm sure some people had a problem with it, but I didn't. But
yeah,
so he's, you know, he's raised on Earth until his like mid-20s, and then he comes back to Eternia to take back the kingdom from Skeletor. And so this takes place kind of in between those moments. So this takes place after the storming of the kingdom by Skeletor at the start of the movie, but before He-Man comes back.
It's in that jump in the movie between where he baby Prince Adam gets sent off to Earth and before adult Prince Adam comes back.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
So this, you know, I will say the one thing that I will say about this book that with a big negative is the cover features He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. you know, on the cover, this book is not about that. This book is entirely about Orko and a wounded sorceress who's in the form of a bird, you know, and trying to protect her. Neither He-Man nor the Masters are featured in this book.
No, and we shouldn't see, I mean, I guess it depends on how they take the story, but we probably won't see He-Man for a while in this book.
If we see him at all, maybe in the fourth issue.
Towards the end,
I will say it's a little BS on the advertising
Yeah.
But I understand that the book wouldn't sell if it was literally Orko and a bird
on the cover. Masters of the Universe, Orko.
Orko's Quest.
I would buy that.
Right. Well, and I will say, so one last thing I'll say about the movie before we hop back into the book. If you are a fan of 80s Flash Gordon, Highlander, Queen music, Master of the Universe is your movie.
Check out the soundtrack. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Brian Mays is one of the musicians who does the score for the film. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's very
much. You suddenly have my interest, Paul.
Yeah. Very lots of references to Queen and Highlander and you know, the Flash Gordon vibes. It is absolutely in the vein of that, but, you know, modern.
I need to check that out. Yeah, that sounds awesome.
I'm totally interested in the comic you guys are talking about. I would not pick up a Masters of the Universe book. I would pick up an Orko's Quest book without a, you know, second.
That's what hesitation. This is about. And I will say, you know, for what it's worth, because I've given Masters of the Universe a shot and multiple times, and it makes me sad because the book is nowhere near the quality of what they're doing in the Energon universe. I really wish, like, Skybound would just get the rights from Dark Horse, because they aren't sticking the books like Skybound is. But I enjoyed this comic quite a bit, actually. I thought the art was good. You know, Orko is not my favorite character, but I think he do a good job in this kind of establishing.
He absolutely is mine, tied with Cringer.
Like, this is a Wayne book all the way then, because it is.
Yeah, it does sound like
all Orko all the time.
Yeah, my two favorite characters are definitely Cringer and Orko.
Yeah, Orko, the sorceress is there, but and not necessarily in her human form. You see, and also I'm Orko's not my favorite, but you're seeing Evil Lyn show up with some of the henchmen,
Trapjaw,
It
is very much, I will say, this does a good job of capturing the voice of the movie as well, because there's a decent amount of humor in this book with the action. I think this is, I actually, despite the fact that that the cover being, being misleading.
Being a lie.
Yeah, being a complete lie. The book itself was actually a lot of fun. And so I actually recommend, if you're a fan of the movie, definitely pick it up. If you're a fan of Master of the Universe, it's probably one of the better comics that I've read from Dark Horse and the Masters of the Universe stuff. So it's worth checking out.
Well, and I don't know, you know, it could be that the cover for the issue 2 is also a lie, but it looks like Man at Arms might show up in issue 2, maybe.
I think it's a lie. It's a bold-faced lie. I think we're just going to see Orko and the Sorceress on their quest. But I check it out, especially Wayne, definitely up your alley. I know Master of the Universe, not normally your jam, but you might enjoy the book after you've seen the movie. Because in the context of the movie, I think it's actually...
Well, I'll certainly check the movie out once it hits Prime.
Well, it sounds like you're...
I just bought the comic, so I will give it a read.
Paul, I assume you're going to pick up issue 2 then?
I am, actually.
All right, good deal. I'll pick it up too.
And the 80s were back this week, because not only did we have Master of the Universe, we had Mask, number one. I mentioned Skybound Entertainment. This is the newest book in the Energon universe. And there was a surprise if you picked up the book in person.
So physically in a blind bag.
Yeah, physically in a blind bag. There were three in the blind bag, depending on which one you got. I think there were three options. I don't remember what the third one was, but one of them was Mask number 2. So you actually got the second issue of the book.
Wow.
As a surprise. One was a copy of a preview copy of an upcoming ROM comic series. So ROM is going to be brought into the Energon universe. And so that was a special announcement that unless you picked up that blind box, you wouldn't have known.
And that's how you get me into the Energon universe.
Because you know what that means, Aaron.
I know exactly what that means. I know exactly what that means.
Micronauts
cannot be far behind.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I did, when I saw that, the first thing I thought was...
Yeah, I was just like, fuck.
I'm a little hurt about this whole blind bag situation. So the FedEx delivery had not shown up when I was there Wednesday afternoon to pick up my books. And so I came back a couple days later to grab it out of my pull, and you know, they'd sold out of everything else. So I did not have a chance to get one of these blind bags. That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm going to actually check the comic shop near me. I've mentioned them before, Comic City. And so I'm going to check them out, and hopefully they've got some of the blind bag editions, because I'm genuinely curious to see if I can get a copy of ROM, because I would love to see how that is brought into the Energon universe. But I will say, I think Mask, you know, Mask has been being set up in both G.I. Joe and in Transformers over the last few months. I think this was actually a really strong first issue. I don't know about you guys. I'm not as familiar with the property.
Correct. Me neither. You know, G.I. Joe and Transformers are definitely more familiar with Mask. You know, Mobile Armored Strike Command, for those not in the know. But I'm really kind of digging it. This first issue was great. I mean, if you read the Energon Special 2026, it kind of introduces you to all the main characters and bad guys that are going to be showing up. So that helped me quite a bit. But I enjoy the interaction with General Hawk. I had this weird flesh-eating wormhole technology, I think, sufficiently creepy for me.
Oh, and this isn't General Hawk, right? Like, this is... Do we know this is actually... This is Zartan Hawk.
For those who have been reading, yeah, G.I. Joe, oops, it is sorry. Not General Hawk. It is Zartan. Spoilers. But yeah, if you're just picking up Mask number one, you might not realize that. But yeah. It is the fake one, so it is great, man. It's really
good. Like it sets up a lot of the universe. It sets up the characters. It has a lot of action. You know, it's not one of those first issues where nothing happens until the last page. Like right. I think this is actually a pretty meaty first issue. And I will say I still don't. You know, I still probably need a little bit more info as to where. I mean, I'm sure it's going to come. You know, where these masks come from.
All right.
Right? Like how does this work? What do they do other than shoot lasers? Like, what's the big deal about literally the mask?
You're right. They have not really delved into the technology and why it's so game-changing. They treat it like it is, so we know it's supposed to be, but they haven't really shown us on the page. Well, we've seen the blade jet.
The lasers in the suit seem to be really powerful when they have their reveal. For me, I was a huge Mask fan as a kid, but unlike the other properties, it never really came back. So like Transformers it stayed around. It still exists. Where Mask faded into the background, and they only have started re-releasing toys in the last year. So I don't have the same level of like encyclopedic knowledge of Mask that I do of Transformers. You know, I absolutely love the book. I don't remember character names or anything from the original show. I remember the vehicles fairly well, and the car was definitely exactly like I remembered.
We saw the blade jet, and that kind of is very similar to what I remember of the blade jet back in the old days.
I remember the blade jet too. I think I even had one of those as a kid. I have to say the wormhole ridden people. Where it was definitely creepy and scary, and I'm wondering if that at the end, I'm looking at it, is it like a Transformers Stargate or
I think so.
Coverage?
Yeah, I would imagine so. You know, you mentioned Transformers, and I feel like one of the things, you know, we decided not to talk about Transformers this week, but I've been talking about the Energon universe and how much I've been enjoying it, and almost every month, I'm reminded of the fact that I need to fucking read Void Rivals, even though I don't want to. because this week's issue of Transformers issue 33, shows Hot Rod and Cup, I think.
Springer.
Yeah, Hot Rod and Springer. And it's like, and they're talking about their adventures. And I'm like, damn it. I know that happened in the pages of Void Rivals, and I love Hot Rod.
Yeah. I am way more interested in what's going on Earth than I am Cybertron, until Hot Rod steps out of the ship holding Energon. And now suddenly I'm all on board for what's going on in Cybertron, because Hot Rod is one of my favorite characters. Rodimus Prime is my favorite character. Yeah. So I have this hope that Alita is going to fail and that the Matrix is going to choose Hot Rod, and that we'll get the comic version of Rodimus Prime.
Rodimus Prime. I love, but yeah, I mean, the Energon universe, I, you know, obviously Mask, strong first issue. I mean, Wayne, did you like it? Because you're actually the one who actually remembers Mask.
Yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. It is where they tried to keep things down to earth on some of the other books as they came out. This one is unapologetically 80s sci-fi through the roof. I mean, they don't hold back between the masks themselves, the vehicles.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. I mean, I think it's a lot all of fun. In. If there's one more property, so we've talked about, you know, obviously Micronauts, ROM the Space Knight, but if there's one more property, I want them to somehow fold in.
Mm-hmm.
Hear me, Skybound. I need you to get the rights to Dino Riders.
I was thinking Centurions, but Dino Riders.
Because Thundercats and Silverhawks, like, I know Dynamite's already doing something with them. I don't love it, but it is what it is. But Dino Riders, no one has. Get me a good Dino Rider comic. I love it. I want it.
Cadillacs and dinosaurs.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we're gonna jump ahead. We've been talking about 80s. We've been talking about Master of the Universe and Mask and the cartoons of our youth. But jumping to something a little bit more modern, there's a lot of stuff going on from DC Comics. Aaron and I read Absolute Catwoman this week, you know, which is in that whole Absolute universe. It's a spinoff of the Absolute Batman book. Wayne, I want to spoil this real quick. The last page reveal of this book is that Absolute Cassandra Cain pops in, you know, setting up. I think there's going to be an Absolute Cassandra Cain upcoming series, or at least one shot in the universe. So just FYI. But Aaron, I'm deadly curious what you thought of this book, given you just really kind of hopped into the Absolute Batman stuff recently, getting caught up on all that.
So I really like the story for Absolute Catwoman. I love that it really turns the our Catwoman perception on its ear. Catwoman is very much Batman that we know from the regular DC universe, in that she's got a cat cave. She's wealthy. Like ridiculously wealthy. She's got, you know, she's bought an island or in the process of buying an island. So very different than the Catwoman we know. You know, she's, you know, extremely competent. She's a fighter. You know, she's got all these little devices and tools, and she is well regarded for what she does, and just very much a sort of Batman aspect to the Catwoman character, which I thought was really interesting. I thought her very aggressive, violent sort of approach was super interesting. And I also really enjoyed the appearance of Cassandra Cain in the book. What I did not enjoy was the art style. It really apes an anime manga sort of look to it in certain frames that I found really off-putting and out of place from the rest of the art in the book. It just, every time it happened, I groaned. I just hated it, and it would take me out of the book. But on the whole, I like this book a lot. I'm in the process of reading the Absolute Batman books. I've already finished volume one. I'm in the middle of volume two right now. I was resistant to those books to start out with, but I am really enjoying them. So I'm welcoming Absolute Catwoman with open arms. I'm digging this book, with the exception of the artwork. How about you, Paul?
You know, it's funny. I actually really liked the artwork. I find the artworks in a similar style to Absolute Batman, so that's probably why I'm okay with it. I found it very kinetic and energetic. It honestly reminded me a bit of the art style from, like, the Batgirl series from, you know, the regular DC universe. So I actually didn't like the art style. I could see why you didn't like it. It definitely has a little bit more of a manga influence to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it, and I actually really liked this book. I like, you know, some of the things you mentioned about Catwoman basically being the Batman in this universe, right? So Batman in this universe, he's a worker, you know, he's a blue collar worker, you know. I don't know how he gets his money, but, you know, it's comics, so whatever, suspension of disbelief. But, like, in this universe, Joker is the one with Wayne Manor. Joker is the one with all the wealth. But Catwoman's also pretty damn rich. Like you said, she's buying an island. She has a cat cave. She's got all the gadgets and the gizmos. And you know, there's a sequence in here where Catwoman and Cassandra Cain are fighting on the top of like motorcycles. So you know, for me, that it just has a very strong like modern action movie, you know, like Asian cinema influence to it. And you know, it's reflected in the art style, it's reflected in the action, and I thought it was a fun first issue. I'm totally on board.
I did not care for the cat bike, how it turns into a running sort of leopard bike. I did not care for that.
Yeah, that was a little weird because it basically only happens for one page before it turns into a motorcycle. Yeah. But it was, yeah, I was like, okay, well, that's cool. And then flip back to a motorcycle the next page. So I don't know. That was interesting. But I will say this is kind of an odd thing to say because it's a spinoff. I actually almost enjoyed Absolute Catwoman a little better than sometimes I enjoy Absolute Batman because it doesn't have the wordiness, the Scott Snyder wordiness to it.
Yeah.
You know, he's only a co-writer on this, but Che Grayson takes over lead writing.
Yeah, it does not feel nearly as messagey as the Scott Snyder book. Because Snyder feels like he's trying to get over his point of view, not just his story. And it feels a little laden with that messaging. But
Hops into the story. Hops into the fun, hops into the action. And so I enjoyed that about this one.
Agreed. I recommend.
All right. And I know you and Wayne have been reading that Barbara Gordon book in the regular DC Universe.
Yeah, we're only on issue 2 in the Barbara Gordon Goes to Jail storyline, but there was a Batman issue in which that occurs. Wayne, tell us about Barbara Gordon.
Yeah, so I didn't actually read the Batman issue when it happened, so I don't know if it revealed it then. I didn't know until reading these books that her getting captured was her plan.
Yes. Yeah. Trust the plan, Wayne. You got to trust the plan.
That she wanted to go into prison to investigate basically Vandal Savage's having any of his detractors that go to jail killed.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me to get that. I've enjoyed the series so far. I enjoyed seeing her, you know, fighting against it. This issue, though, we get a bit of an unreliable narrator from her point of view because she's been drugged up. We don't know what happened to her, but she got beaten to within an inch of her life and wakes up in the infirmary. And because of that, she is drugged throughout the entire rest of the book. So we have moments of lucidity as she's awake and trying to figure things out. And then we have just hallucinations like crazy.
And a lot of flashbacking to her encounter with the Joker.
Yep. I loved seeing Commissioner Gordon, who's not commissioner, is apparently just a beat officer at this point. And seeing him trying to run and catch someone at his age with his bad knees was priceless. He's still a fighter, but he is an old man, and Nightwing showing up was very timely.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying the feel of this story. There's really a sort of a no man's land sort of vibe to it. That the story has anything to do with no man's land.
But there is kind of a tone. Behind enemy lines. Yeah. And there is nobody is coming to help you.
That's right. Nobody's coming to help. But instead of it being the entire Bat family that's behind enemy lines, it's Barbara. And I love the story so far. I was a little frustrated in this issue only because really hate to see my hero drugged up, and she's being drugged up in this book. And it's storytelling. It fills me with anxiety and frustration. That's the point of it. So I did not enjoy this part of the story as much, but I am enjoying the story overall.
What I did not expect out of this issue was my highlight. Was the conversation between Nightwing and Gordon.
Right.
Just that conversation of, she told us no rescues.
Yeah.
And the two of them basically going back and forth talking about how frustrating it is that she is stubborn and independent when they want to help her and they can't. But apparently Gordon has sent somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a very entertaining story, and I love the artwork in it. Yeah. I think it's well written, it's well drawn. Really big thumbs up.
Well, and it's a story that's changing because first issue was all about her kicking ass in prison.
Yeah,
she was just taking on groups of people. This issue is the opposite. It's a her after having been drastically beaten up and then drugged up and unable to protect herself throughout the whole issue.
Yep.
Very different.
Well, with her being beaten so badly, what's going to take one week, maybe 2 weeks before she's back to status quo?
2 days.
Yeah. It depends on how long she keeps being drugged up.
Yeah. Just put a bomb on that. That's all you got to do.
So, are these normal medications, or did someone slip her something that's not a normal medication after you get beat up?
She's being given painkillers, quote painkillers, right. But it does morphine. Seem like they're. Mm-hmm. It does seem like they are inducing something else.
Yeah, the first one is actually a shot in an IV. Mm-hmm. After that, it's pills. But the person that's giving them to her doesn't... Like, you get the impression at first that the person giving them to her is who Gordon sent in to help protect her. And you realize near the end that that's not the case.
And really what she needs is just a big jar of Pruno. I think that'd fix her right up.
She needs some Tessum.
She needs some bag balm, really. Just rub it on there. It'll be fine. Bag balm.
Vapor rub. Some mixed vapor rub.
That's the thing of my wife's family. Like any type of little things, like here's some bag balm. Broken arm, bag balm. Runny nose, bag balm. Cold, bag balm. Cough, bag balm.
I think every family has something like that. Ours is mixed vapor rub.
BC powders.
BC, I don't know that one.
I don't know bag balm.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it till I met my wife, the person to be my wife. She had a big old container in her head, her apartment. Like, what is that? Bag balm. Okay. Well, I'm glad. I mean, it sounds like you guys are both into Barbara Gordon.
Yeah, it's a really good book. I'm not sure where it's going.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, Andrew, I'm curious your thoughts, because on Avengers Armageddon, we picked up the first issue of this new Marvel
event.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a crossover. I don't know the tie-ins. I'm not going to bother with the tie-ins. I'm just going to stick with the core event book. Well, let me clarify. I don't know if I'm going to stick with the core event book. So it's written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Delio Diaz and Frank Alpizar. In this book, basically, this is a continuation of the events of One World Under Doom. Doom's regime has ended. What has happened is that General Thaddeus Ross, Red Hulk, has taken over Latveria, called it New America. And is basically, he's gone power mad with the power of Latveria and has decided to now bring democracy to the entire world by force.
It's One World Under Doom, goes into Captain America, 9 issues of Captain America, then went into Wolverine Weapons Armageddon, and now we're at Avengers Armageddon.
Yeah. And so, so the UN has told the world's superheroes to stand down. They're like, the UN's like, let us handle it. You guys just make things worse. Stop.
And to be fair, they have a decent. I think they have a decent point. I think the UN is not necessarily wrong on this.
Yeah. No. Agreed. But the Avengers are like, screw you. This is our problem. We're going to go handle it. So they, So Red Hulk is storming Simcaria, I think.
Simcaria.
I don't know. The Avengers have deployed at the end to take him down. Now, obviously, this is the first issue of I don't know how many issues, but Andrew, I'm gonna say I don't think this was a poorly written book. I think the art was well done. I don't feel like this was anything new. Like, this just kind of feels like every Marvel event I've read for the last 30 years to me. I didn't get any different vibes from it in the same way that I did, like, when Blood Hunt came out and just
really that's grabbed what I was gonna me say.
Through the first issue, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that this is no but Blood Hunt so far, anyway. You're right, it's kind of a Hulk brigade, but we've seen the Avengers rally to deal with Hulk-esque threats in the past many times. We have all these dire warnings from the UN, but are there going to be really any consequences? At the end of this event, is everything going to be back to status quo? I'm going to say probably. I don't think you're going to see the Avengers in jail. I think things will go back more or less to normal, to where they were before. Having read Captain America this last, most of a year, I'm kind of interested to see where this goes with the whole, because they didn't talk about this, but Ross has this whole what if machine that Doom had hidden in Latveria that he's unearthed. And Tony kind of mentions it obliquely. He's like, Doom must have some sort of predictive machine that he's found. So I'm kind of curious, but I could, this whole Hulk brigade and the art was just ridiculous where, you know, you have all these tanks and armored vehicles and they're all like 5 to 10 feet away in a circle. Like that's such a silly little, you know, image for a military action. So I don't know.
I had a big issue with Spider-Man in this book because he's talking to Tony at one point in the book and he's like, Tony, you know, I'm just some guy from Queens. This feels way above my pay grade as a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And it's like, the hell are you talking about? Like, you've been involved in galactic, you know, stuff before, and you're like, I don't know, this whole war with you know, Latveria thing just feels a little too big for me. Maybe I can stay behind and just take care of things here, you know, and just take care of the friendly neighborhood while you guys handle the big thing. And Tony's like, yeah, sure, no worries, we got this. It's like, the hell is happening right now?
Why does that even need to be in there? Why does it even need to be in the book?
Yeah, honestly, you just don't need to have Spider-Man literally shows up in this book just to say, hey, can you
leave me out of this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you could have literally left Spider-Man out of this book and not.
Yep.
And I wouldn't have questioned it. Like, maybe he's just.
No.
There's so much going on in his own book, right?
Spider-Man is not an integral Avenger, right? He's one that drops in, drops out of Avenger stuff. So if he was just not on the page, you would never have missed him. I would never miss Spider-Man in this crossover.
Spider-Man literally shows up. Like, you know, the Avengers are meeting on top of Avengers Tower.
Yeah.
Spider-Man shows up of his own accord just to say, leave me out of it. Like, just don't come, dude.
Right.
Like, it just felt like it was, it, like, that part really... I actually really struggled with that part.
It seemed pointless.
Yeah. It seemed pointless and out of character. So for me, I'm going to give it one more issue, I will say. I feel like there's enough meat on the bone that I'm interested in seeing where the next issue goes to see if it goes somewhere new. But it's honestly, it's a lot of the same. And Marvel, we go through these phases with the big two where we get into one more than the other, right? Where the other one seems like it can do no right and the other one and one seems like it can do no wrong.
Right.
I've been struggling with Marvel for at this point a couple of years now. Like every event book feels like it's not great. Every relaunch, whether it's X-Men, Spider-Man, Captain America, you know, Iron Man just doesn't grab me. Like it's just not grabbing me as a universe right now in the same way that like Absolute DC is, or the DC or Batman and Superman in the core DC books, you know, it's just not grabbing me the same way. So I'm going to give it one more issue to see where it goes, but
Marvel used to be the continuity company, the everything counts. It all happened, all of that. And yet now it feels like every time a new book or event happens, it doesn't matter what's happened before. Let's just tell the story.
Yeah, I don't feel like they wipe out continuity. They just disregard it at their
own. Yeah, they disregard and ignore it.
Yeah. Well, I will say this plays more into continuity than most events, I think, because it is building off one world under Doom, which, you know, has built off both things before and then, you know, has built off, you know, two different series. I do feel like this is paying a little bit more attention to continuity,
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so, you know, you mentioned, you know, tie-ins, but there's not a single ad in this book for any tie-ins.
Yeah, there's not, other than the Captain America book. So maybe it's only these two books.
Well, and, you know, Captain America would make a lot of sense, but it's a little blurb under Captain America 12. It says, Red Hulk put Steve Rogers in a coma, and now Doctor Doom has taken his soul to hell. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to be directly dealing with the events in Latveria and Sarkia right now. Now, maybe it's going to loop back around when Steve wakes up, right? But at the moment, I think it's going to be off on its own story. So I don't know if there is going to be much in the way of tie-ins. Because any big event, there's always that checklist, right? You know, get all these books this month that play into it. So I guess we'll see.
Paul, what's coming out next week?
Wayne, I love it. So next week from DC Comics, we have the second issue of Absolute Green Arrow. We really enjoyed the first issue, so looking forward to checking that out. And the debut of Absolute Two-Face in the pages of Absolute Batman. From Marvel Comics, we have Spider-Man Long Way Home, which is written by Jonathan Hickman with art by Adam Kubert. It's an out-of-continuity miniseries written by, you know, Jonathan Hickman. Also features the Punisher in it. It's just kind of a one-off tale. It's not set in the continuity of the upcoming Spider-Man movie, but features the characters that will be in the upcoming Spider-Man movie. So it's kind of, you know, a tie-in in that way. From Image Comics, Aaron had to drop, but we've got the latest issues of Odin and Of the Earth. If you'll remember, I liked Of the Earth, Aaron liked Odin, and we committed to reread the first issue of both before issues two. So we'll be talking about that next week. And finally, from Image Comics, The Trillion Dollar Kid, from Jeff Johns and Pete Tomasi on writing and Stefano Simeone on art. This is kind of like a modern day Johnny Quest kind of book, set in the Unbelievables area of the Ghost Machine. So that features what's the other book? It's the family book. That's
Hornsby and Halo and the what are their names?
Yeah, Hornsby
and Halo. It's the Fantastic Four. It's the Fantastic Four. The Odyssey.
The Rockefellers. The Rockefellers. So it's set in that universe. Sounds like a fun book. I may check out the first issue. The Rockefellers. They actually did a relaunch of Rockefellers recently. Rockefeller Zero, written by Pete Tomasi, art by Francis Manupal. I love both of those creators. I just never really tried the book, so I'm going to give that a shot. And so they're kind of setting up this like continuity of the Unbelievables, this own little mini universe.
Yeah, and they're doing an issue zero of Hornsby and Halo as well, but then they're continuing with the kind of the original numbering. They're not restarting at one. They're just doing some zero issues to. I haven't read it yet, but I guess to set the stage, catch people up who maybe haven't been on.
Rockefeller struck me a little bit more like Challengers of the Unknown kind of thing. But I don't know. I'm going to give it a shot. So I'm going to hop into that. Check out Trillion Dollar Kid. Check out some fun stuff next week. So all that and more next week. Make sure to check us out. And if you would like to leave us a comment or some feedback on this episode, hit us up at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise. You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek on Facebook, Instagram, and X. All right, everyone. Have a great week, and we will see you next time.
See you next week, and watch some soccer.
Yes, go, no. Go USA.
No, I won't be doing that.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.